Hello everyone, let me introduce our speaker today. Shingao is a postdoc at Harvard from Misha's group. He's an expert in quantum machine learning and quantum complexity theory. So today he will talk about quantum computational advantage, recent progress and next steps. Let's welcome our speaker Shingao.
Okay, thanks for the introduction. Today I'm going to talk about quantum computational advantage, recent progress, and the next steps. And before that, here is the outline. The first part I will talk about what is quantum supremacy, and also known as quantum computational advantage, and why is it important. And second part, I will pose the question, has quantum computational advantage being achieved? The short answer is perhaps not. And in this part, I will explain why that's so. And in the last part, I will discuss the next generation of quantum advantage protocols and some candidates might be like efficient classical verification and solving combinatorial optimization problems and also some quantum learning. And here I will talk about our recent work on quantum language models and some potential implications about something like quantum version of ChatGPT. Okay, so this is a figure of number of papers about the quantum computing, and we can see that it grows very fast. And roughly, you know, the last year is roughly like 5,000 papers in quantum computing. And this is announced plan. Government fundings into quantum computing, it reaches like tens of billion dollars. So we have put so much effort and investment in quantum computing. So why is quantum computation so important? And the reason is related to the concept quantum advantage, and it can be illustrated in the following way. So the blue region represents practical problems, and red region represents problems feasible for classical computers, and the yellow region represents problems feasible for quantum computers. And there are some interesting problems, practical problems, but they are hard for classical computers. We really want to solve it. And there are also problems which are feasible for quantum computer, but hard for classical computers. Solving this kind of problems means achieving quantum advantage. And we are mostly interested in this part, the intersection between blue, yellow, but outside the red regions, which means problems with practical quantum advantage. And this is basically the answer of the above question. However, even without considering practical problems, just proving quantum advantage is very challenging. And this is basically the motivation of Google's quantum supremacy experiment. And the intuition, we expect a quantum advantage because we know some quantum systems have a large amount of entanglement, and it is very hard to simulate classically. So we expect this large amount of entanglement should play a role in some computational task. And one example of such kind of system is a random circuit quantum random circuit, and it can produce a large amount of entanglement. And this is basically Google's quantum supremacy experiment is based on. And we know in 2019, Google claims that achieved quantum supremacy. And there are original claims that in order to solve the same task, 10,000 years is required by classical computers. But we know this is a highly overestimation. Because later people found that just several hours is enough. However, 2 years later, USTC announced that they achieved stronger quantum supremacy based on a larger system size, and their claim is that 50,000 years is required for supercomputer. So their claim is very important because first, it constitutes a milestone of quantum technology, which shows some promises that we are on the way to practical quantum computers. Second, it has very fundamental scientific implications. It tests quantum physics with high complexity, similar to Bell test, but in the region of high complexity. And as a result, it violates the so-called extended Church-Turing thesis, which is a very fundamental statement in computer science, and which states that any physical realizable computers are equivalent to Turing machine up to only polynomial overhead. So their protocols belongs to sampling-based protocols. And in sampling-based protocols, first we have a description of the problem, and then we put the description into a quantum device, and this quantum device produces a quantum state, and then we mirror the quantum state. And then we get some distribution according to the measurement. And sample from this distribution QX, we can get statistics of the quantum devices. And then we can also challenge classical computer by put the description into a classical computer and ask it to also produce some statistics. And the quantum device can be either random circuits or boson sampling or even many-body dynamics, quantum many-body dynamics. And the goal of quantum supremacy is to try to find a specific quantum device such that the statistic, we can easily distinguish between the statistics from this quantum device and arbitrary polynomial time classical algorithms using just polynomial number of samples. So this is a high level picture of their protocols. And we can see that it is quite similar to Bell test. So it is insightful to take an analogy to Bell test. And here I give a table and we can compare them, Bell test and quantum computational advantage with the following as different aspects. First, the scales improve for quantities. For Bell test, it is in a field body system. But for quantum computational advantage, it tests quantities in many body system, and especially the system with high complexity, especially computational complexity point of view. Actually, people may ask, we have known there is quantities in field body system, so why do we care about why do we thought about quantities in many body system? Actually, this is not obvious because the appearance of noise and decoherence may kill quantumness at a microscopic level. And this is basically the key point of quantum computer skeptics like Phil Kelly. The second aspect is that they both have some precursors. So in Bell test, the precursor might be a spectrum of hydrogen atom. And we know that it cannot be used to replace the role of Bell test because we believe without quantum mechanics, it's hard to explain this phenomenon, but it does not exclude any potential classical theory or hidden variable theories. And in my perspective, in quantum computation advantage, a similar thing is that basically strongly correlated condensed matter system like fractional quantum power effect or high temperature superconductivity. I think this is similar. So we believe it's hard to explain this phenomenon without quantum mechanics, but we don't have rigorous proof or no-go theorems, especially from computational perspective. We lack for complexity theoretical foundations. And then in Bell test, we have EPR paradox. I think quantum simulation plays a similar role. I mean, basically EPR paradox and quantum simulations are quite close to proof of quantumness in the relevant settings, but they don't have a very explicit operational procedures to do the test. But in quantum computation advantage side, we have Shor's algorithm. I think if we can implement Shor's algorithm experimentally, then it is perfect. We can test quantum computational advantage with high complexity. But the problem is that it is not near term. And then they both have some restrictions. In Bell test, we have two players, and these two players are space-like separated. And in quantum computational advantage side, the restriction is that both quantum and classical machines could only run polynomial time algorithm to produce the samples. So we chose polynomial time because in computational complexity theory, polynomial is basically equivalent to efficient. And then the landmark is in Bayer test, the landmark is the violation of Bayer's inequality. And in quantum computational advantage, the landmark is violation of extended Turing thesis. As we mentioned, this is the foundation of computational complexity theory, which defines efficiency, the concept of efficiency in a device independent way. But if we have a quantum computational advantage, this claim is not true. Okay, we have seen that why is quantum computational advantage or quantum supremacy so important? Then let's go back to the question, has quantum computational advantage been achieved? Before that, let me briefly introduce in more detail about their protocols. So their protocol is called random circuit sampling. The quantum device is still a sampling-based protocol, but the device is a random circuit. And there are two parameters very important, which is one is the number of qubit n, and another is depth d. And here we have some parameters in the current experiment. Google have 53 qubits, depth is 20, and USTC's second result has 60 qubits, depth is 24. And then it was believed that the statistics are hard to produce classically from random circuit. But what does this mean? This means that suppose on the left, we have uniform distribution. On the right, we have ideal distribution Q naught defined by the random circuit, but no noise. And previously, most of the theoretical work were trying to prove that in order to get a distribution Q, which is close to Q naught, up to a small constant in number of L1 norms between these two distributions, it is classically hard, unless there is some severe complexity consequence, like P is equal to NP, some generalization of this. However, the experiment is here. Even the experiment cannot achieve this proved regime. And we also don't know how to measure or characterize error norm from experiment. So this leads to the concept of a linear cross entropy benchmark, or XEB for short. Google come up with a quantity called XEB. Here is the definition. The Q naught is the probability value of ideal circuit, and the Q is a probability value from experiment. And then we can rewrite it in the following way. We regard X as a random variable, and it is sampled from experiment. So in experiment, we don't need to estimate QX. We just need to sample bit string X from the distribution Q. And then we have a function of X, which is 2 to the power n Q naught X minus 1. And this is defined by ideal circuit, and which may be computed from supercomputer. And then there are several nice properties of XEB. For example, the first one is that when Q is roughly equal to Q naught, XEB is roughly equal to 1, which corresponds to the case experiment is perfect. And then Q and Q naught are correlated, then XEB is equal to 0, which corresponds to the case experiment is too noisy. And then we expect that non-vanishing XEB will imply non-trivial correlations between Q and Q naught. Actually, Google made a stronger conjecture, which is that XEB is roughly equal to fidelity of the quantum state between experiment and the ideal circuit. So roughly speaking, it was supposed, XEB was supposed to be a complexity version of Bayer's inequality. So which means that, for example, some XEB values from experiment, Google has roughly 2×10⁻³, and Google claims that a classical computer cannot achieve this value, but they can achieve, so they achieved quantum supremacy. And this is USTC's second result, roughly 2×10⁻⁴. So we can see their value is close to zero. So they still claim that this tiny XEB value cannot be achieved classically. And actually this was further supported by computer scientists like Scott Aronson and his collaborators. Roughly speaking, they proposed a conjecture with some complexity theoretical evidence, which states that even a tiny non-trivial XEB is hard to achieve classically. And how tiny is it? It's basically like, as long as XEB is larger than 2 to the power minus n, n is number of qubit, then classical computer cannot achieve this XCB. And let's call this as Armstrong-Gunn conjecture. So their evidence is technical, but I can give some key idea here. It is based on the path integral argument, which means we can expand the amplitude of a circuit into a summation of some simple terms. And each term is basically resolution of identity where we can choose either zero or one into the space-time position. And then they are totally 10 to the power nd paths. And each path has roughly equal contribution, which means roughly 2 to the power minus nd. And suppose we have a polynomial time classical algorithms. So roughly speaking, intuitively, we can only get a polynomial number of paths. So the total contribution is poly n times 2 to the power minus nd, which is much smaller than 2 to the power minus n. So this is their intuition. However, their conjecture is not true. We refute it. So here is our result. There is a linear time algorithm we proposed, and then we can achieve XCB 2 to the power minus OD, which is much larger than 2 to the power minus in experiment relevant settings. And so we refute Armstrong-Gunn conjecture. And as bonus, we also show that the claim of XCB roughly equal to fidelity is also not true in general. And the high-level idea of our algorithm is actually simple. So the small XCB experiment is due to the noises effectively truncate the correlations in the quantum circuit. So then this inspires us that how about we just truncate the circuit explicitly. So we remove some gate in the middle of the circuit, and then the subsystems in the circuit decouple, and which is then the resulting system is much, much easier to simulate. So if we restrict subsystem size to be constant, then it is a linear time algorithm. And this is just high level idea, which does not work well actually. We also have some other highly non-trivial algorithmic ingredients. I just skip them. Okay, so then we have talked about asymptotic behavior. How about finite size behavior? So let's see some spoofing algorithm, the current spoofing algorithm. So Google has 53 qubits, depth 20 circuit, and XCB is 10 to the power minus 3. Their original claim is that 10,000 years is required for supercomputer to achieve this high this XCB. And we know this is not true because there are many skeptics. Like for example, the most famous one is from Pan Zhang's group. They can use 15 hours and 500 GPUs to get higher XCB values than Google. However, some people argue that the algorithm are based on tensor network contraction algorithm, and it's still intrinsically exponential time complexity algorithm. So it's not scalable. So there's no complexity implications consistent with, like, for example, Armstrong-Gunn conjecture. So the most straightforward way to avoid this attack is to consider larger system sizes. So this is basically what USTC has done. They claim that their new system requires 50,000 years for supercomputers. However, our spoofing algorithm give a different picture. We can get larger than 10% of Google's XCB value. It's not higher than them, but still comparable. But we use just one GPU and 0.6 seconds, very limited computational resources. So furthermore, our result question quantum supremacy at a much more fundamental levels, because our results are based on the understanding of noisy circuits, and we use very efficient algorithm. And actually we have better performance when scaling up. For example, when we increase the system size, but keep the gate fidelity and depth unchanged, our XCB will get better and better, but the experiment will be worse. And it seems that around 60 qubits, our algorithm will outperform Google. And we can also get 5% to 15% XCB values compared to US TC circuit. So you may wonder, how could we analyze the performance of our algorithm? Because here is the definition of XCB. QC is the distribution from our classical algorithm. This is easy to estimate, but how about Q naught? So it turns out that analyzing individual quantum circuit or dynamics is extremely difficult, which means Q naught is hard to compute. However, if we average over unit trees about the XCB, we can reduce computation of XCB to some quantities in statistical classical statistical mechanics models like diffusion reaction model or Ising spin model. So the average behavior via emergent statistical mechanics models provides us more intuitive physical pictures to understand the system and also some efficient semi-analytical tools. And we basically use this to estimate the performance of our algorithm. And then people may ask, is there any potential limitations such that Google can avoid the attack of our algorithm? I can mention several in the following. So let's denote the XCB as e to the power minus delta d for noisy random circuit. It decays with depth d. And then epsilon is the strength of noise. This x-axis is n times epsilon, which means the total noise per layer. And the delta is the decay rate. And at the beginning, the delta will be proportional to n times epsilon. And up to some constant, it will saturate to a constant delta naught. And this delta naught value, depends on the circuit details. And we have strong evidence to show this picture is true for 1D, and we conjecture this also holds for general architectures. So now the problem is reduced to like compare XCB of noisy circuit and our algorithm. And it's also reduced to compare the decay rate. And we have evidence to show that, strong evidence to show that delta naught is larger than delta C, which means our algorithm has a better XCB value. And this is true for 1D by the mapping we mentioned to Ising spin model, and this is related to the phenomenon of spontaneous magnetization. Okay, then several ways to avoid our attack. For example, people may wonder whether we can modify Aronson-Gunge conjecture from 2 to the power minus n to something like exponential with d. But we have strong evidence to show that at least for 1D, it is excluded. For high dimension, we are not sure. And also, how about other benchmark beyond XCB? For example, we can consider log version of XCB. Actually, in our work, we also show evidence that this is also unlikely. Maybe the most straightforward, the easiest way is to use geometrically local, to extend geometrically local architecture to high connectivity architectures, because in our algorithm, we need to escape some, we need to escape some gates to decouple the circuit. But if it's high connectivity, then it is hard to do so. So then we may ask this question, is there any fundamental problems in random circuit sampling, or we can use some tricks to avoid the current attacks? And then this leads to our new result. Here I gave some informal statement. We basically prove that there is no statistical test which can distinguish between the following two cases. The first is that M samples from noisy circuits under constant noise per gate. And the second is M samples from a classical algorithm in polynomial time in terms of number of samples, number of qubits n and samples m. And but notice that this algorithm is not as practical as the previous one because we have a very large polynomial overhead, although it's polynomial. But this is enough to show that there's no violation of the extended Church-Turing thesis in noisy random circuit models. Okay, so here is a high-level idea of our algorithm. So previously, all the theoretical works to support quantum supremacy are based on path integral in computational basis. Then we consider extension to Pauli basis path integral and in density matrix representation. Here, each space-time position could have four possible assignments like identity, poly X, Y, and Z. And the next property of this representation is the following. So we will have exponential decay for the class with the number of non-identity polys instead of roughly equal contributions in computational basis. And then we can show that noise can make the decay even faster. And then we have some sparsity, like most of the paths, the contributions are zero. And we can also use an equivalent point of view based on Fourier expansion. So the output of quantum circuit can be expanded by Fourier series. And then we have some exponential decay term in terms of strength of noise and the degree of the Fourier expansion. So then we can truncate the Fourier expansion. Then we can get a very good approximation to the noise circuit. And each Fourier coefficient is very easy to compute. So this is a high level idea. And then I can give some more formal statement of our result. Suppose the L1 norm between uniform distribution and noisy circuit is 1 over m. So here I write it in terms of 1 over m because in order to distinguish this L1 norm, we require at least m number of samples. And then we require that we can produce a classical distribution which is close to the noisy distribution to L1 norm much smaller than 1 over m. This is our goal. And then we can achieve this small L1 distance by running time n times m to the power 1 over epsilon, where epsilon is a constant according to the assumption that we have a constant noise per gate. And we also assume anti-concentration conditions, which require that our algorithm, our result is only proved for depths larger than log n depths. This is a technical conditions, but it's not a problem because even to show quantum supremacy without noise, they also require this condition. And third, we require enough randomness in the gate set. We cannot say anything about a specific quantum circuit. Okay, so this result improves our previous result from quasi-polynomial time algorithm to polynomial time. Okay, so then a summary of our result. Our result basically make people abandon the concept of scalable quantum supremacy in random circuit model without error correction. So this is a comment from Scott Anderson's blog. And this is a quantum magazine, which say that our result closed the window of quantum supremacy. Okay, let's go back to the question. Has quantum computational advantage really been achieved? If we consider the level of rigorous, level similar to Bayer test, the answer is no, because we show that there is no violation of extended Church Turing thesis. And we show some severe loopholes, and we also show we have fundamental problems, which suggest that the loop code, there is no hope to close the loophole if we still use random circuit sampling. And then, how about the finite size quantum advantage? This is questionable because if we just consider finite size and no complexity guarantee, why don't we just consider quantum simulation, which is an even more useful candidate to show quantum advantage? And then it is also possible that to improve our spoofing algorithm, combined, for example, with the tensor network method and the XCB spoofing algorithm, maybe we can fully close the window of quantum supremacy even for the finite size quantum advantage. Okay, so these limitations and problems in the current experiment suggest that it is very imperative to seek the next generation of quantum advantage experiments with a more solid theoretical foundation. So this leads to the last part of the talk. So here I give several candidates about next generation of quantum advantage protocols. The first one is based on efficient classical verification. The first idea is from Scott Aronson's talk. See also Xiaodi Wu's GitHub. The idea is try to distinguish between the following two cases. The first case that we have actually a simple quantum circuit, but we decompose it into a form of two-qubit gates, And but this description of two qubit gates looks like a random circuit, make it look like a random circuit. And this is called a circuit obfuscation. And the second case is a truly random circuit, also written in terms of two qubit gates. And then the goal is to, then the expectation is to show that it is hard for to distinguish these two cases by classical computers, but it is very easy to verify these two cases by quantum computers because we simply run this quantum circuit then doing some measurement. However, there are some problems. First is that this is just a high level idea. The theoretical foundation has not been established. And then we also don't know the effect of noise. So the second example is inspired from Bayer test. So in Bayer test, we have an EPR pair and the Alice just mirror her qubits by X or Y base, her qubit by X or Y basis, but does not tear Alice, does not tear Bob her measurement basis and measurement result. And then the Bob state will become one of the four states, 0, 1, plus, minus, according to the measurement basis and measurement result. But Bob does not know which one it is. And then Bob mirrors X plus Y or X minus Y basis. And according to the measurement result, we can analyze the statistics. And basically, we can calculate Bayer's inequality to see whether there's quantum noise. And then recently, there's a concept called computational Bayer test. And the scenario is inspired from this, but here we don't have Alice, we just have Bob, and Bob is a quantum computer. And then we the goal is to make Bob to prepare one of the four states, but also make Bob does not know, which one state it is. And this can be done by some classical cryptography techniques, and it is reduced to a problem like computing, finding the X, such that X, solving the equation of X squared modular N. And this is as hard as a Schwarz factoring. And then the high-level idea is basically like the no communication condition here is replaced by computational hardness. If Bob cannot solve a hard problem like this, he will not know which state it is. And so roughly speaking, this is similar to Schwarz algorithm, but combined with ideas from quantum K distribution. But the key point is that the circuit size is much smaller than Schwarz algorithm. However, we still have a trade-off between the problem size, like this problem, and versus fidelity. So the current status about this protocol is that it requires very high many-body fidelity, which means the fidelity of the whole circuit. So we are still very clear about whether the current experiment can achieve these protocols. Okay, then the second direction is related to solving combinatorial optimization problems. So recently there is an experiment to show that Rydberg atom array can naturally encode maximum independent set problems. The key point is that the encoding is very natural. We don't need the full programmable quantum processor. We just use the Hamiltonian itself to encode the problem, to run some adiabatic type algorithm. And the work shows that evidence of superlinear quantum speedup for MS instances. And then the understanding of this algorithm can be related to configuration graph. Configuration graph means, so each node corresponds to a low energy configuration in the original classical problems. And then the edge corresponds to a small number of bit flips, a few body transitions, which means if two configurations can be connected by a small number of bit flips, we can just add a connect them by edge. And then quantum optimization algorithm can be viewed as a quantum work in the configuration graph. And then the problem is to try to find which kind of MS instance can show exponential quantum speedup. And recently, there are some theoretical works which construct configuration graphs with exponential quantum speed up based on adiabatic type of adiabatic algorithm of quantum work type. And then the problem is how to encode this configuration graph into MS or some other combinatorial problems. If it can be shown, then we can use similar algorithms to show quantum advantage. And then the last candidate is about quantum machine learning, and I will introduce our recent work on quantum language models. So here is the architecture of classical neural translation model, RN architecture. So in each time step, we have some X as input, which can be corresponded to a word from A, and the Y is the output corresponds to a translation result. And in each time step, we have hidden neuron H, which will evolve along the time direction according to the dynamics described by training parameter W and also X and Y. And then we proposed a quantum model recently. In this case, X corresponds to a description of measurement result. Oh, sorry, description of measurement phases, and Y corresponds to measurement result. And here W, we consider a bosonic system. W describes a Gaussian unitary. So the unitary is simple, it's just Gaussian. And then hidden neuron is replaced by quantum state H, which carries the information along time direction. So concretely, our model is a slight modification of Gaussian bosonic system. And it's modification because instead of Hamiltonian measurement, we should mirror eigenvalues of this operator, which means we want to mirror a periodic function of linear combination of position and momentum operators. And then we have a rigorous result. We show that there exists formal language translation problems such that the quantum model just requires n hidden neurons to solve it. Here we regard one bosonic node as a quantum neuron. But any reasonable classical neural networks require at least n squared over two hidden neurons due to the appearance of contextuality in our quantum model. And it was, we have similar results for discrete models. So the contextuality, it can be illustrated briefly in the following. Suppose we have a 3x3 table, and for each blank, we can fill it by plus or minus one. And the requirement is that for each row, the product should be plus one. For each column, it should be minus one. And it turns out that there is no solution for this task. But there is a solution by operators in quantum mechanics for similar tasks. So here, for each blank, we could have operators with eigenvalue plus one or minus one. And the product should be plus of each row should be a plus identity, and for each column, it should be minus identity. And further, we require that in each row or column, all the operators commute with each other, because we want to make the concept of product well defined. Then the row or column are called context, and then we have a solution. So this example can be formulated as some no-go theorem in a relevant measurement scenario. So then we could have some analogy between quantum contextuality and linguistic contextuality. So in quantum contextuality, the above example basically shows that in order to predict the measurement results, we need to memorize the context, which means the observables we have mirrored around the observable we are now focusing on. And similarly, in linguistic contextuality, the meaning of a word also depends on the context. So these two are similar. And we also have some constraints in a context, like the product of row is the plus one. And the constraint can also, in linguistic contextuality, which is similar to, for example, grammar or fixed phrases, or some other more complicated conventions in language. So then we test our model to a Spanish to English translation problem. And the first line is the Spanish sentence, and the second line is the truth English sentence, like, we must clean up the kitchen. And the CRN means contextual recurrent neural network, which is basically our quantum model. And it gives like we must clean the kitchen. And the fourth line is from classical deep learning models. Here we use GRU models, which is a variation of error scheme M, almost of the state of art deep learning models for language task. And the second example is similar actually. So here I want to emphasize that we just restrict both classical and quantum models to have 26 neurons, because this is the size we can simulate our quantum model in our laptop easily. Okay, then you may ask, how about more advanced architectures like transformers? So ChatGPT is based on transformers. So it belongs to, roughly speaking, it belongs to the encoding decoding architecture. It turns out that our theory still holds. We still have some rigorous separation result. And then we tested numerically still on the Spanish-English translation task. This horizontal dashed line is the performance of our model at 26 neurons. And then the x-axis is the number of neurons in transformer. Y-axis is the cost function, so care divergence a bit, and care divergence per unit. We can see that the transformer has a similar performance, and which means bypass our models at roughly n squared over 2. So the same scaling as our proof. I don't say we can prove this. Maybe this is just a coincidence, but this is what we observe. And then you may ask, how many quantum neurons do we need in order to outperform the state of art classical models? I don't know the answer, but let's see some. Suppose we are optimistic about this scaling, even in realistic data. And this is the size of a ChatGPT, roughly 10 to the power minus 11 parameters. And if this scaling still hold, maybe quantum models just require this size, roughly 10,000. This is still far away from near-term devices, but this leaves some opportunity and a challenge. And we want to prove a larger separation between quantum and classical models, and also try to test it in near-term. So this is the third examples. So summary. In the first two parts, we show that in the current quantum advantage experiment, there are severe loopholes and also fundamental problems. And then we also briefly introduced three candidates for the next generation quantum advantage, and including efficient verifications, optimization, and the machine learning. So that's what I want to talk. Thank you for your attention.
Thanks, Xingo. Any questions?
I have one question.
Sure.
So it's very cool. I have a question about the RNNs and the transformers.
Yeah.
So this models are usually trained using maximum likelihood, right? Where you use the logarithmic probability of some sentence. If I understand correctly, with this quantum models, you cannot evaluate the amplitude or the probability of a sentence. So my question was, how do you train the model in the quantum setting?
Yeah, so far we don't have a complete answer, as I mentioned, this unitary is Gaussian. It has some, this is the parameter we want to train it, but it's just the Gaussian. So we use some mathematical structure of the Gaussian unitary. We can get the analytical expressions for certain kind of cost functions, and which can just use samples from the quantum devices. We don't need to estimate it. But frankly speaking, this data and this data, we just use care divergence as we simulate the quantum system in our classical computer.
I see. So You're assuming you have access to the amplitude of the state somehow for this
example. Yeah, just for this data, because if we just do sampling, the overhead is too large. We cannot get real result.
I see. Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Thanks for the talk. You talked about, was it finite size quantum? What was it called? Finite size quantum advantage. Finite size quantum advantage. That's where you don't have a scaling. You haven't proven a scaling difference or a exponential scaling.
Yes. I'm confused with this concept. This is from Scott Aronson.
Oh.
Because we show there's no exponential separations. And then Scott says, oh, maybe there is finite size quantum advantage. Because we cannot get higher XCB than Google so far. So that's what they call finite.
Yeah, so like any experiment that has done a calculation that, I don't know what, hasn't been done classically or can't be done in reasonable time, is that what finite size quantum advantage is?
No, I think it's just simply like, that's the 60 qubits. So for this, there are 60 qubits experiment. Any classical algorithm cannot solve it.
Okay. So how many examples, like outside of the Google experiment, how many quantum systems have a finite size quantum advantage? Or how many? Claimed finite size quantum advantage.
I don't know. I heard that they will have a 72 qubits experiment. I guess they will call it as finite size advantage.
But I'm talking about like, what about things like this Gaussian boson sampling and other types of?
I see.
Is there lots of claims of finite size quantum advantage?
I see. Yeah, maybe just two, right? Random circuit sampling and boson sampling.
Okay, thanks.
Any other questions?
Well, so since you worked with Misha, is there some way for the Rydberg atoms to show finite size quantum advantage in the near future?
Actually, I think Misha is more ambitious. This example is basically his back to, maybe not his expectation, but my expectation is to show not even finite size advantage, but also scalable advantage. Because I want to find MS graph such that we can show exponential speed up. But due to the appearance of noise, maybe we can still like have a polynomial time algorithm. But the polynomial time algorithm might be very huge, as I showed in, for the random circuit. Although it's polynomial, but it's a huge polynomial. So for finite size advantage, it's highly likely, I think.
So Misha wants to prove an exponential quantum advantage for like an MIS type optimization.
Yeah.
Problem with some, okay. So you can, there's a way to prove that it's better than like heuristic optimizers? Like SAT solvers and quantum annealing or simulated quantum annealing, sorry.
Yeah. Maybe let me talk more about this. So this model, they can show, prove exponential speed up, but based on what they call as Oracle model. Oracle model means in this configuration graph, if now the algorithm is at one position, one configuration, it can only use information about the nearest neighbors. So in my opinion, all the commonly used heuristic algorithm like simulated annealing, or even quantum Monte Carlo try to simulate the quantum system, or some other updating schedule, but only local in a local way belongs to this type. Yes, so the goal is basically try to exponential speed up compared to any updating algorithm. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
No problem.
Start my cutting?
Yeah.
Can you hear me from here?
Yeah.
Okay, I just wanted to ask a question about the quantum and the classical language models. You talked about quantum contextuality. Is that the same as like, you know, in the Cohen-Specker theorem? Like, do you mean the same thing in terms of contextuality?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm just interested, like you had the sort of the linguistic contextuality. Like, is there some relationship that you see there when you're training these networks that somehow they influence things in some similar way?
Here we just have analogy, but the numerical data gives some evidence. The India has some relations.
Okay.
Maybe I can ask one more question. So, so it's about, again, quantum supremacy. So I remember Scott Aronson says that we should find different problems because of all these issues. And he mentions one where like you have a very complex circuit, but that you ultimately find a kind of like a one string or a few strings that you can then verify classically efficiently.
Yeah.
Are any of these examples in that that style of quantum supremacy, or
so I guess you are mentioning this, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So is this, has this been I mean, are there clear examples of that type of supremacy? I guess this one, the U times U minus one is one, which is easy.
I saw a paper also called quantum circuit obfuscation based on breedings. We use some knot theory. Like suppose you have the rough idea is the following. So you can use a knot to represent a quantum circuit, right? For example, using some logical quantum computing things or some other mathematical structure. Then you start from a trivial knot, and then you just tie it, twist it, and make it looks like complicated, and then it's hard to untie it, and then this might be some example to do so. Yeah, maybe you can also use like ZX calculus, ZW calculus, some other pictorial language. So I think any tools from like circuit compilers can be useful in this, but no theoretical foundations.
I see, okay. Thanks.
Okay, if there's no more questions, let's thank Xingao again.